We want to have immersive experiences. We want to have things that blows our mind, that that just gets into your soul and into your heart. And Africa as a whole, southern or east, does that every single time. That's what I experience every time I travel on a group or a site inspection or on an educational. People get emotional. People get really, really touched by our African hospitality, by the tastes, the people, the passion of Africans, of being African, whether it's a third world country, but just how amazing we have actually made this, all our destinations, for people to experience that bucket list, emotional, money can't buy incentive experience.
That's travel industry legend and pro Yolanda Vuka, Vice President of Sales and Marketing of Dragonfly Africa, Southern and East Africa's leading travel company. In this episode, we sit down with Yolanda and Dragonfly CEO Mike Waller to discuss our recent adventure together in Rwanda. Even in the midst of the global pandemic, these intrepid souls are still leading groups on adventures in Africa for incentive travel events, both large and small. I'm your host, Kip Lambert, and you're listening to the Destinations Incentive Travel Podcast, where we help busy professionals like you conquer the challenge of creating memorable and motivating corporate retreats, incentive travel events, and meetings and conferences. So thanks for listening. Let's get started. All right, everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm so grateful to have my friend, my friends from Dragonfly Africa, Mike Waller and Yolanda Vuka. They've just been awesome partners of Destinations for years. And anyway, just can't wait to talk to you today a little bit about Rwanda. Maybe we'll get a little bit farther afield from Rwanda too. But Mike, Yolanda, welcome.
Thank you.
Say hello.
Thank you.
Hello. Hello from South Africa, from Johannesburg, and Yolanda.
Yeah, I'm from Cape Town, one of the most beautiful cities in the world, I have to say. I am a little bit prejudiced, but loving South Africa, and thanks for including us, Kip.
Well, you're welcome. You know, and thank you for being here. I've had such a great time with you over the years. You know, I'm celebrating my 20th year in the industry this year. And, you know, we've done many a programs together. I've done different, familiarization trips with you over the years. And, you know, we're just so grateful for the partnership and all that you have done to make us look great to our clients. You've been a partner that we've just, adored, and really we wouldn't go anywhere else. Anybody that travels with another DMC in Africa is just the wrong thing to do, right? So
thank you, Kip. That's wonderful. Yeah, thank you.
So for you, to get started, you know, let's talk a little bit about you two. Mike, we'll start with you first. You know, what's your history in the industry? Where did you get started, and how'd you end up where you're at?
Well, I've actually not South African by birth. I was born in Zimbabwe, and I grew up on a tobacco farm. And, you know, Zimbabwe had its own problems in the early days, and there wasn't much career opportunities there. So I moved with my family to South Africa straight after school. And I guess I was interested in a few different things. And I actually coincidentally drove past a hotel in Johannesburg, and I popped my head in there and inquired whether they'd be taking any hotel management trainees. And they had actually just started a program, and they said, well, can you start tomorrow? And that was pretty much the next 12 years for me. I was in the hotel industry, mostly in country hotels situated throughout South Africa. And yeah, I loved that. And I think that's what brought me to Dragonfly, because my last hotel general manager position was at our own hotel that the company owned, called Sibele Forest Lodge, which was very, very similar to that picture in your background, you know, which we're going to get onto in Rwanda. But Sibele was situated in tea plantations, or coffee plantations, actually, in the mountains of the Mpumalanga region of South Africa, just above the Kruger Park. And so in many ways, what you're seeing behind you is very similar to our hotel setting that we had there. And then, I was looking to move into a slightly different field. And Rupert, who owns Dragonfly, said, well, why don't you come to Johannesburg, which was never really entered my mind, and said, join us at Dragonfly. But and the rest is history. I've been here for 23 years with Dragonfly ever since.
Awesome. Oh, that's great to hear. Yolanda, how about you? How did you get your start?
I always knew I wanted to be in the hospitality industry just from, I loved going to restaurants and hotels and cooking, etc. So naturally went to the hotel school after I finished high school, loved every moment. And I was actually headhunted from the hotel school to go up to Sun City to run one of our biggest sporting events in South Africa. And so I didn't even finish to get my, I got my degree, but I wasn't even there for the ceremony. Straight up into work, loved it at Sun City. Did some really good, big, exciting events like Miss World. We had, like, I looked after all the stars, Michael Jackson, Tina Turner, Tom Jones, all of those guys. I kind of had to, as soon as they arrived, kind of look after them. So yeah, I just
giving away your age.
I am giving away my age. That's really sad. And then I went overseas for a bit, came back, worked at a beautiful country hotel called Sphere, and Rupert, who was one of our biggest clients, actually. Yeah, also headhunted me and just said, I think you need to join Dragonfly. And at that stage, I was like,
he poached what? You.
He did poach me. What do we do? But just jumped into it and absolutely love the opportunity to make people experience our destinations and just creating magic. Love it. Nothing better.
It's like you've led into a perfect segue, you know. So what I want to ask you both, and you can maybe take it in turn, you know, what makes you so passionate about hospitality, planning events, and delighting guests that come on the programs that you do?
Maybe I could just jump in quickly and say that COVID probably shed a light on it, because I think when the hospitality industry fell to its knees over this period, I think all of us sort of considered, okay, well, what next? What would we do now? You know, what would our next career choice would be? And when I started to go through the options, I realized that nothing really compared to this travel industry, because, I mean, basically we sell people's dreams. I mean, imagine selling life insurance or selling, you know, secondhand earth moving equipment, or, you know, fertilizer or something like that. Really difficult, you know, but if you can sell holidays and amazing experiences with beautiful pictures and beautiful experiences, I mean, there can be very few career choices that would be as rewarding.
Love it. Yolanda.
So very similar for me. I think for me, it's knowing that I live in the most beautiful part of the world, talking about the African continent, East Africa, Southern Africa. And for me to be able to share that and that experience and the food and the people, to share that with clients, is that makes me the happiest. I've seen so many people, you know, there's prejudice and not too sure if it's going to be safe coming to Africa. And just to see that first experience, arrival, and everybody just, wow, why have we never been? So it's sharing my passion for our destinations, and just to be able to do immersive kind of bucket list stuff like the gorillas, seeing your first lion, going up Table Mountain, wonderful African culture, and the history that we have in the destination. So for me to be able to share that, that's, love it. Nothing beats that.
I love it too. I love, you know, sometimes you can go to, it's personally, you can go and visit different places, you know, like when people come to our home state of Utah. I love taking them to Zion National Park. It's one of my most favorite places in the world. And I've been there, I don't know, 100 times since I was a kid. And, you know, a lot of times people ask, well, you know, why are you going there again? That's usually because I might be taking somebody that's never been. And there's something about showing other people something that you're passionate about. And like, you could go to the top of Table Mountain 100 times, you know, but if you're taking different people each time, it's fun to share that passion. And I think that's one thing that drives a lot of us in our industry. We love sharing the things that we care most about, and it might get humdrum. Like if you, like I said, like if you were just to do it yourself, you probably, you know, would reach a point where you've said, I've been there, done there, and I don't need to do it anymore. But being able to take people and show them, I think is one of the funnest things that we do. So let me ask you this. You guys are so passionate. You're so well known in our industry for having that just an amazing level of passion. So it feels like that you might be on kind of your own personal mission. So what would you define your own person? Like, how would you define your personal mission in our industry as?
Well, I'm going to, for me, it's kind of changing people's perception about Africa. That is my biggest driving force and my passion, and to really contradict what people think about Africa. We're a third world country, totally get it, but with first world infrastructure, creativeness, just magic on our doorsteps. And to see right from the start, our clients have these kind of perceptions, and how, when they actually come for a site or an educational, how that changes, and how Africa changes people's hearts. It's I always say that, very cliche, but if you come to Africa, you leave a little part of your heart in Africa, and you always have to come back for more, because there's always more to see. So that's my driving force.
Yeah, I think that's well put, Yolanda. I certainly second that in many ways. I think also that along a similar vein, I think, you know, often success and successful countries are governed by, you know, how efficient the infrastructure is, how organized the whole place is. But, you know, the mystical thing about Africa is, despite us not having necessarily all that sophistication, we have tremendous space. We have, you know, varieties of animals that can be seen nowhere else in the world. And we have cultures which, you know, have long since died out elsewhere in the world. So for me, it's certainly introducing clients to that side of it. I think that, you know, people's bucket list items, I think Africa is often on people's bucket list items, but I think more and more that pushing it to the top of the list, because, you know, the species are dying out quickly, cultures are dying out quickly, and space is running out, you know, so to go somewhere where there's just endless space, you know, and to take a drive, whether it be in South Africa or East Africa, you know, through a wilderness area and see animals roaming in their natural way, it's something that's becoming more and more rare, I think, around the world. And so for us, you know, they call us deep dark continent or deep dark Africa. In a way, that's part of our attributes, is that we haven't actually used up all our space and evolved to a stage where, you know, a lot of those sort of things that are dear to us have gone. You know, they're still there, and, you know, long may they last. But I think people are realizing that, you know, the clock is ticking, and, you know, if they don't come to Africa, they may not see a rhino if they come in 20 years time, or if they, you know, they may not see certain things that are certain cultures and that sort of thing. So yeah, indeed.
Excellent. Well, so tell me a little bit about Dragonfly. What are the elements that set Dragonfly apart from not only destination management companies in Africa, but just in our industry? How have you guys been able to set yourselves apart?
Should I go, Yo? I'm sure Yolanda will have a lot of good points too, but I think we've always been a company that's very focused. So we don't try to be all things to all people. So we're focused on our markets, and they're handpicked, and there's probably half a dozen with at most. So we don't try to be all things to all people. We rather understand that market carefully or very well, invest in that market. So we'll go over there regularly. So in the North America, for example, the USA, we come across there often. We host fam trips out of that market. We have a good, strong representative office based there. And as a result, I think we know and understand the market well. We know the needs. We're not trying to sort of dabble a bit in the East, dabble a bit in sort of, you know, Russia or any of those other markets. We stay quite focused on what we do. And so much so that we actually have a different division of the company that handles the European markets, with that being Scandinavia, Benelux, that sort of thing. Whereas Dragonfly, for example, handle really just the North American and Australia and South American markets. So I think that's been pretty key to our success. And I do know that, you know, we tend to, our own staff criticize us for micromanaging them. And that's never necessarily a good thing. But I think where it does, where it does benefit our clients is that the attention to detail is always there. One only has to look at our operations documents, which we produce for every program, and the minute detail, blow by blow, minute by minute, is you know, one of those things that really sets our client at ease. They know that everything's been thought out, that there's a contingency plan for anything that might go wrong. So yeah, I think that's some of the key differentiators. Yolanda, I'm sure you've got a few.
No, that was great. I do think our core values are still strong and being adhered to. And we would be nothing, because we offer a service, even if we didn't have a great team. It's all about our team, their dedication. We've got the best, we always had the best warriors on the ground. So I think that's a really important thing. And also, that we build up relationships with our clients. It's not just, right, let's do a program. No, it's like we get to know each other. We like working with our clients. And that's also important.
Yeah. If
I could add, Kit, just like in the same vein, Kit, the supplier relationships as well that we nurture and massage is very, very important. So we have a deep level of respect for our suppliers and they do for us. And I think that's what gets the job done wherever we take our programs.
Oh, that's perfect. I think that kind of leads me into this next phase of this conversation. You know, you do have a really great relationship with all of your suppliers. I know when COVID hit, things were pretty weird for all of us. And I know that instead of just resting on your laurels, or at least just waiting for this thing to be figured out, you guys kind of went on the offense to go to different hotels and to stay active and showing what our industry was doing. So can you talk to me a little bit about what you guys were doing in the middle of the pandemic when groups weren't coming to your area of the world, and how you were able to help your suppliers and help the awareness of what was happening with COVID related stuff within our industry?
Yeah, that one, I mean, I took that very much personally, and I just thought that if we don't show, because we basically travel influencers ourselves to our clients, where they're going to go, where is it safe? And I got, we couldn't fly at that point. I did a road trip and stopped at all our favorite hotels and properties, etc. And just brought the message home. It's safe. Protocols are fantastic. So we were very active on social media, hugely. And I think people really saw that. The responses were phenomenal. So we're still kind of trying that. But that for us was a big drive. We need to show our clients we believe in what we're saying. It's easy to say it's fine, it's, you know, protocols are there, but to actually go in, experience, see it, doing it, I think that really, really stuck out. And the responses that I've had from our clients has all been, we've been following you, it's like we're still traveling, etc. So that was very important. But what we also did, because our suppliers were going through exactly the same, we had regular kind of little cocktail events with our top suppliers, our guides, trying to keep them positive, trying to make sure they know we haven't forgotten about it, that we're going to get through it. We invited all the hotels, and we kept that going. And that also is, I think, a very long-term investment to show we're strong, we're going to make it, but we can't make it without you. So we continued to support them, and we were really, really vocal on social media with showing that we believe our destinations are safe. And also took quite a bit of a, what's the right word, Mike? Chance or whatever, by doing these educational in times when people weren't vaccinated. But we just believe that everybody, especially us in the industry, we need to travel. And as much as we need to show you guys it's safe, the same for you with your clients. And I think I'm sure you had great interest and support from your clients seeing you out there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I mean, that brings us to the point of just like, I get an invitation from you to come to Rwanda on a familiarization trip. And, you know, this is Rwanda is a country in Africa I've never been to. You know, while I was in middle school, the genocide is happening in Rwanda. And that's kind of my mental picture of, okay, I know things are obviously better in 2021 in Rwanda, but my mind is still going back to learning about a genocide, seeing that movie Hotel Rwanda. But you guys kept on offense and you kept really moving forward. I think it gave a lot of confidence to all of your suppliers, not only in Rwanda, but in all the other countries that you operate, that you're going to be the one that's going to help lead the way out of this mess and that we're going to be stronger for it. And I think that it was great for me to get that invitation, because when I got it, I said, I'm going. There's nothing that's going to stop me from going. Because I think I feel the same way as you of just like, yeah, COVID has been really hard. It's been a tough thing for all of us. And it's obviously just touched everybody in the globe. I don't know that anybody has been sheltered from it. And, you know, our industry is definitely taking it on the chin. But, you know, having you have the confidence to say, please come, let me show you Rwanda. It's going to be amazing. We're going to trek with chimpanzees and gorillas. And we're going to stay in some great hotels. And I knew, just because I know you so well, that, and I've received those long, big packets, of itineraries of where everything's planned down to the minute. I knew that it was going to be a great experience. So we went to Rwanda together. Why did you choose Rwanda as a familiarization trip? Of all the places that I know that you did others, but I think that Rwanda was on your list, maybe because you had something to prove.
Quite out there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Come on, Yolanda, tell us.
I took a bit of a chance, but a
gamble.
I wanted this to be something that you guys couldn't say no to. So I bent a few rules for sure, inviting spouses with, which we don't usually do, choosing somewhere that really showcases it's okay, even in Rwanda. And also offering a bucket list experience. All of us have been cooped up. What better to go to Rwanda and go gorilla trekking? I mean, that's just showcasing the destination at its best. I also knew definitely that Rwanda, because it's such a small country, so progressive, and proactive, that it was probably the safest country to go to at that point. But I wanted it to be really pioneering at its best, with showcasing, just something amazing.
Well,
I think my fellow directors were a little bit, what? Are you crazy? Yeah. Were you getting money for this? And that's, again, we had great partnership. And I think, I know every single person on that trip was, it was cherry picked. It was also the clients that we know would have the guts and the energy and the progressive thinking to know that this is going to showcase that Africa is back.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad that you took that risk. You know, I didn't know that I would see in my own career, just right after getting back, I posted some things on social media and conversations with clients. I had so many people say, why would you do this? Like, why would you go? Like, I don't understand. And, you know, their understanding of Rwanda was very similar to mine. They're thinking of the past and the country's tumultuous history. And, wow. And, you know, but then add the layers of the pandemic, they just, you know, was just blown away. And it was just like, tell me more. I remember getting back from Rwanda and I was home for maybe 2 days. And then I went straight to Cabo and we executed a quick 5-night trip for a client, an insurance company. And the CEO saw a bunch of things that I had posted on social media and just had that reaction. And it led to some really great conversations about travel in general and traveling with family and having the guts to go places, because at a certain point we're all going to have, you know, I'm sorry, I love Mexico, you know, and I love those destinations, but there's a huge difference in the experience and the memorability of a trip between hitting the beach in Cabo and having some great Mexican food and some beach time and some other things versus getting off the beaten path, heading to a place that you will never, ever, ever forget, and having almost like a spiritual experience hanging out with gorillas. So, yeah. You know, I think that raised some awareness that travel needs to be back. Like we're as human beings, we want to get out. We want to share experiences like that with our loved ones. And we can't, I don't know that we can be stopped, right? Like the lockdown and COVID has been a huge pause for people, but I think we're seeing this pent up demand for living experiences and squeezing every last drop of life that we've got, because our time here on earth is so short, and we might as well just, you know, get out there and live it. And I think that I'm grateful to you both for putting that together. So we arrive in Rwanda and we have this whole, I don't know, how many times did we get tested for COVID? I'm trying to I'm thinking I had my test to go.
Yeah.
We had a test upon arrival. We had a test pre-chimpanzee trek.
Pre-gorilla. And to come home. Yeah.
And then to come home. You know, having that thing jammed in your nose 5 different times in a span of 6 or 7 days. That was you know, but that was the price of admission. And I think that's the world we live in. I think people get it. And so what are some of the other things that, you know, you've had to navigate besides the COVID testing where you've really come out on top, or at least you've been able to provide some of that extreme value to your clients?
Well, we certainly, we understand that COVID is also changing the way that we need to operate. I mean, staffing, you need extra staff to just look after PCR testing, because you have to get it right with different arrivals, different departures, etc. So that we've learned. And I think the educational has also educated us as to what we can expect of the future of a group traveling. So it was, I mean, that... and also just, I think to your point, just that the wanderlust is there, that people are wanting to do more exclusive, more kind of immersive traveling. That's because life is short. Life is very short. So yes, as much as I would love Mexico or Mauritius or whatever, but to literally see a gorilla not even 7 meters from you is incredible. and it makes you feel part of it. And then also the history, especially with what happened in Rwanda, is to also, because everybody's got this very negative connotation to it, but what has happened in the country and how absolutely proactive and positive they've come out of this is super, super amazing and a great story to tell.
If I might, I mean, I could also add that I suppose half your challenge, Yolanda, was, and this was what you were alluding to earlier, is, you know, is this the sort of trip we should be doing now? And is this the sort of destination we should be taking people? And is this an incentive destination? And I think we also realized that it has its limitations. Rwanda's very small, and, you know, other than some of the big hotels in Kigali, you know, you really are looking at for a small exclusive group or for an extension. So to have the take up that we got, the enthusiastic take up, I think Yolanda literally, as she sent the invites out, she was getting those back saying, yes, I'm definitely in for this. And, you know, we put a lot of on our clients this time around. You know, typically everything's fully sponsored. But, you know, the participants that came on that trip, as you know, Kip, you know, contributed generously towards, you know, making it a success as well. So they contributed in terms of their spouse and for some of the extra permits and that sort of thing. So, yeah, as Yolanda said, it was very challenging putting together what potentially would be a very expensive trip at a time when none of us had any funds, really. We were all sort of, you know, really eking out an existence. Not to say that's changed a hell of a lot just yet, but, you know, one hopes that it's going to. But certainly having such a favorable response and having that debriefing at the end when we were at Gorilla's Nest and everyone just basically saying how life-changing it was spiritually more than anything was a great, yeah, great accomplishment for us. We really we knew that it had been a success and that it wasn't, that the risk was worth it, basically.
Yeah, it goes back to how travel has that power to break down barriers and help you realize just different things about yourself and help you, you know, find some understanding of different cultures and people. And I was so, so impressed with Rwanda. You know, we spent the first night, we arrived, we got our test and we were taken straight to our hotel. And, you know, I'm thinking this is probably still the protocol, but we had to stay in our hotel room until our test results arrived, which, you know, really came back very quickly. I think the very next morning, we were able to leave our room by 8 a.m. and we were having breakfast, and you took us on a tour of Kigali. And that was just, you know, to me, I've been in different places in Africa and I couldn't believe the cleanliness of the city. You know, it just seemed everywhere I looked, there was rarely a wrapper or a empty water bottle on the ground, that the people just take care of their, I almost kind of in my head was saying, this is the Switzerland of Africa. Like, this is so crazy. I just didn't expect that. So you have these third world conditions. People live in very similar conditions as in other places in Africa, but they have a pride in their country and they keep things clean. And that was so impressive. And I think too, for me, you know, I loved the experience at the Genocide Museum and Memorial. That was a very interesting visit, just because it took us progressively through what led up to, you know, what ended up being 100 days of just absolute terror and slaughter, and just it was so almost hard to comprehend.
Incomprehensible.
And it was a very heavy visit to that memorial. I think some of the questions came up, like, how deep do we go into some of this history with groups? What can people handle? I think our group handled it great, and I don't think I would do it any other way. Has some of that history impacted, you know, some of the heaviness of the history impacted people's experiences? What's your take on that?
Yeah, I always worry about that because it is emotional and it's true and it's not that long ago. But I think also the fact that we have the guides that lived through it and that could give you answers and even the guide at the museum, he was affected. So he spoke from experience. It's not just the story, but also the fact that they actually want to talk about it. They don't want to shove it under the carpet. So yes, we've had very emotional visits, but not any time did somebody say, if they came on a site or an educational, I want to leave that out. I think it is possibly how you, the perception or how you handle the expectations of what people should expect without making them scared to go. I think it's so important, such an important part of the history. It would be sad to miss it. But yes, to be sensitive to it. Now, Mike, I don't know if you agree, but having Martin and, you know, giving an, at lunch, giving a little bit of his feedback on the history and how he lived through it. Make it real. It's real.
I was going to say it's a great introduction, because what we found is that then throughout, as you observed, Kip, throughout the trip, you know, there were lots of places where there was historical significance to the genocide as we were traveling around. So although we were seeing chimpanzees down in Nyungwe and gorillas up at the north of the country, you know, throughout the journey, they were able to say, well, you remember we talked to you about this, or you remember about that circumstance, you know, from that museum trip. And they were then able to point it out around about the countryside. So basically, it's a very good introduction to the destination. And I think the fact that they've reconciled so well, and that they all have this sense of pride and sense of forgiveness, allow, you know, gets you over the trauma of it. Because I think if it hadn't reconciled as it had, you know, it would be a very difficult thing to deal with and to take along on the trip. But because it ends essentially like it ends with a happy ending, from the point of view of reconciliation, that it makes the introduction great, and it also offsets the trauma of it, or the ghastliness, if I might say, of the situation is offset by the reconciliation.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think you could leave it out. I think it's one of those things that shows so much contrast. You know, when something becomes so dark, when you have an opposing light come in, it puts everything in like very, very sharp relief. And you can really see the difference between, you can get the feeling of what it was back then, but then you can see I could almost see light emanating from these beautiful people, their smiles and their, and just the you almost see it. I hate to make it cliche, but literally it seemed there was this light or twinkle in people's eye of having experienced just absolute, you know, horror and suffering, and coming through on the other side and finding that reconciliation. I think forgiveness is one of the most powerful things that we can experience in this world. And when people come to that, it's so interesting to speak with people that are willing to forgive on such a high, high level, right? Like in the office, you might have some kind of slight and it's over something, you know, like some kind of office politics, and you got to find forgiveness. Right. So I think that, you know, when you do an incentive trip, and if you take people and they experience this, I think as far as the corporate side, you know, when you realize that some people have forgiven and have come out on the other side of such darkness, it almost feels like any slight that we have back home is so, you know, even in, like you talk about, like office politics, your marriage, your relationships, like the things that we pick at each other about, like, how could I not have forgiveness in my heart when these beautiful people have found it in their lives and they live it. And it's just, it's a fantastic thing. So for me, I don't know how you could not.
What a great message that is for corporate, say, Kip. You know, if you bring them out, they've won the trip, they're enjoying that anyway, but they can also learn from something like that, and also how it makes them feel when they go home. I mean, that's largely the success of what you guys are trying to do for your clients too.
Well, it's what I would tell a CEO. I would tell him after, you know, like on the final dinner at, you know, at the gorilla's nest, talk to your people about forgiveness. Talk to them about how that plays out in the corporate environment and how we need to love one another. And these people have found a way. And I think that that's one message I took from Rwanda, is that it is oozing with goodness and kindness and great people. And so, I think it's one thing that has to be done. It has to be highlighted. You got to go to the genocide memorial. It's just, it's part of, you know, it's harrowing to stand on what was an open grave for a couple hundred thousand people. Like you can hardly fathom in your head what you're experiencing and what your feet are standing on at that point, but it must be a part of that trip. So I was grateful that you made that a part.
Hey, just a quick break here and one thing to note. Right now, more than ever, you need a go-to guide to help you navigate the most difficult challenge the travel and hospitality industries and the world has ever faced. Multiple wars, recessions, several pandemics, 30 years and 3 generations later, we're still here. And we plan on being here for many more. We don't stop. We just keep moving forward. So to keep moving forward in 2022, Destinations will host 4 familiarization trips for qualified corporate and incentive travel buyers to see and experience. We have some really exciting locations, so check these out. In April, we're headed to Hilton Head Island to experience the Westin Hilton Head Island Resort and Spa and RBC Heritage Golf Tournament. In June, we go to South Africa to join our friends that you're hearing on this podcast to take in beautiful Cape Town, a private safari, and the iconic South African resort, the Palace of the Lost City. In September, we visit Maui to experience the Wailea Beach Resort and other properties in the Marriott chain. And finally, in November, we will be among the first to try out 2 of Hilton's brand new all-inclusive offerings in Cancun and Riviera Maya. So why do we do these trips? At Destinations, we believe in the importance of test driving a trip, location, or hotel before you take the plunge and spend a whole lot of your company's money. If you're interested in joining us, drop me a note on LinkedIn or check them out at destinationsinc.com/events.
So Rwanda, being a small country, you look at it on the map of Africa, seems like it's a postage stamp. I was super interested to find out, you know, I'm talking to you from Salt Lake City. We're at about, I don't know how many meters. We go by the queen here with our imperial system. We're at 4,100 feet in elevation here, and we're in the mountains. We're close to, ski resorts. I was so amazed to find out Rwanda is at 1,000 feet higher in elevation. Mm-hmm. Well, Kigali is at 1,000 feet higher in elevation from where I'm sitting right now. I mean, it should be called, you know, we call Denver, Colorado, the Mile High City. It's only 100. It's like 100 feet lower in elevation than Denver, Colorado. But as you're looking, on the podcast, you can't see, but, you know, I've got this beautiful background of Rwanda, of these mountains, these tea plantations that are scattered, that are terraced down these mountains. The scenery is stunning. Tell me a little bit about how you've been able to incorporate, you know, some of Rwanda's countryside into the programs, and then we'll get on to chimpanzees and gorillas.
So yeah, I just think, as you said, Kip, how every single bit of land is actually farmed. It was just coffee fields and tea plantations, and just everybody's always busy. Nobody just, it's like everybody has a purpose. They're always walking somewhere with tea at the back or the bananas, etc. And to incorporate something for a corporate, you could definitely visit a tea plantation, go to the locals, see how they still roast their coffee, etc. But I think the biggest thing is to try and get involved with something social responsibility wise, giving back. And there's so many ways. And again, education, always for me, because that's something that really makes an impact with making sure there's a library or books, etc. So we just didn't have enough time, but to incorporate, or like Tina did, just go into the different art school and sponsor a child's year tertiary, etc. I just think that although Rwanda is a very successful country, that is still something that touches people's heart. So many women are also widowed, so many children orphaned, that there's always these wonderful female women projects that we can get involved in. So for me, give back. So you're not just taking from the country, you're also leaving a little bit of a legacy behind. So for me, that immersive side of things, I would always like to include.
Yeah.
I think probably to your question about incorporating sort of the sights and sounds of Rwanda. I mean, look, let's be honest, on incentive programs, always short of time. And invariably, you know, you probably wouldn't necessarily get to see everything that we did on this particular trip. But even if you were just doing the gorillas, you know, the usual way to get there would be from as a road trip from Kigali through to where the key hotels are around the Virunga Mountains. And that trip alone gives you a really good feeling of what the, you know, what the village life is like, what the kids do, the fact that everyone has shoes. The fact that, as Yolanda said, everyone has a job. I think they've got zero unemployment in Rwanda, because even if you're an old man, an old farmer, really probably lacking in physical strength and stuff, they will still give him a job and ensure that he's producing something and bringing it to market, just so that he has a sense of pride and a sense of belonging. So you very much get that when you travel around outside of the cities. And even if you had a short excursion down to the gorillas and back as an extension of a program or something like it, your clients will get to experience that and feel and see, you know, that sort of thing. And then, as you were saying, some of this sort of very interesting mountainous little Switzerland style countryside that that people pass through.
Well, it is an amazing destination. I just love the mountains and the green, like you said, the coffee and the tea. You know, I loved our stay at Nyungwe House. The one and only Nyungwe House was a very impressive hotel, sitting amongst a working tea plantation. Anybody that, you know, is checking out some of the links on this podcast, we're going to have links to the hotel, to different photos that they have. It really is a magical place. The mountains of the national park are just off in the distance. They were shrouded in beautiful misty clouds. And, you know, it was a great experience to be able to go into the lodge. We had a beautiful dinner. Of course, the menu was perfectly selected. We had some local things with some delicious food prepared by, you know, a one and only chef, which of course is an experience all to itself. But I loved having the chimpanzee orientation by our local guides that prepared us for what we were going to be experiencing the very next morning. You know, Dragonfly, you guys prepared us with a perfect packing list of everything that we needed to bring. So the preparation was just perfect. And our experience with the chimpanzees was just incredible. So if I could come in, maybe just set the stage even more. We woke up the next morning, again, more mist in the mountains. It was otherworldly. It was magical. We set off on a trail. And I love the aspect where it's basically the guides tell you, we don't know where the chimps are going to be from one day to the next. We have trackers that are keeping a look after them. And so we start out on a trail, and then pretty soon we're beating our own path down to the chimpanzees. And it's mountainous and it's full out jungle, and there's machetes going ahead, cutting things down. And pretty soon at arriving at the chimpanzees, they know you're there before you see them. They start just screaming, screeching, hollering. And it is a crazy, crazy experience. You know, I felt like
Jurassic Park.
I felt like I was on the turf of an animal that could tear me limb from limb. And that's a crazy experience by itself. But then just being able to arrive and sit on the spot and be able to see them in the distance, moving through the trees and eating and realizing, you know, as you look at them through binoculars, they're not that much different than us, right? Like, what is it? How much of the DNA they share with us?
4% or something. 4% difference.
4% difference. You know, it is, and to see them in the wild, most of us have seen them at zoos and other things in our lives. And I think just Africa, like you said at the beginning, when we have the opportunity to be so close to animals we've only seen in encyclopedias or read about online or some kind of video in school, it is another, it's an unforgettable experience. And that's what we're going for on incentives. So what your experience, you've done this several different times. How have you seen this impact the incentive groups that you've been able to bring out to see the chimpanzees?
Life-changing. It really is life-changing. It's because not a lot of people have done it. Not a lot of people will probably do it. As Mike said, we keep it to smaller groups, etc. It's a very unique and very immersive experience and very emotional. We often see clients just like shedding a tear, and just life all of a sudden gets put into perspective. Somehow that just happens when you see either the chimps or the gorillas. It's like, it's life-changing. That's all I can say. And I have done, it's been so life-changing to me that I actually went on my own the very first time. It was something on my bucket list. And ever since that, I've just, whoever I can spread the word to, I do. And I've had so many clients go and experience it and just come back feeling the same. There's just this rare emotion when you get so close and you're not in a vehicle, you're actually on foot in their territory.
Yeah. And on foot is right. And like I said, the terrain, I mean, we didn't have to trudge in too far, at least our group. We were split up into two separate groups. The other group had quite the trek to find their family of chimpanzees, but we didn't have to go too far, but it was steep, you know? So I think that people need to know Rwanda, doing Rwanda is,
physically demanding.
Yeah, you're going to need to be in a little bit better shape. And so Mike, talk to me a little bit about that. Is that one of the aspects that makes Rwanda a lot of times, maybe it's a deterrent to some people in some of their programs, or is it a reason for maybe only kind of suggesting it as an extension to other African?
I think so. Look, programs? I think it's possible. I think it's possible to enjoy Rwanda without necessarily trekking for chimps and for gorillas. If you were interested in the history and you did the Genocide Museum and you wanted to stay in two really amazing hotels, I think we'd all agree that you could still have a very nice, very enjoyable stay without even doing those. But I mean, if we're honest, I mean, those are sort of the gorillas and the chimps are seen to be the two key bucket list items to do in Rwanda. So I do think it would be a pity if one couldn't do that. You know, we have done for our leisure clients, we've actually had really assisted walks where two of the porters that you'll recall, we had porters with us, they carry the machetes, but they also carry a lot of extra, you know, if we had heavy camera bags or anything like that, they help carry that. And of course, they're very short-footed, they're very fit, and they walk through those forests all the time, so they can get up and down very easily. So it is possible to arrange porters to assist clients who might have some disabilities or maybe not that fit. So I don't think it really excludes anyone. It really just depends, you know, whether they feel comfortable with that extra support. But I think it's without a doubt, a reasonable amount of fitness would be needed. I don't think any very elderly people or anyone with sort of arthritic conditions or anything would enjoy it. It would be probably a little too physical for them. But you know, I think as we experienced, our group was fairly diverse. You know, everyone was able to accomplish it. And, you know, it's very much part of the experience. And it's more than just the gorillas and the chimps. You know, there's multiple. I mean, think that forest that we first went to has 12 different primate species that occur naturally there. So that's pretty amazing in itself. And then, as you experienced, Kip, the bush, the forests, the foliage, the bird life is all extraordinary. So even, you know, even whilst chimps are largely what you're going to look for, there's this whole aspect of seeing so much more of the fauna and the flora, which I think is really important to take in.
Yeah. So, you know, after our chimpanzee experience, we went to another part of the national park and did the canopy walk. It's a series of walkways and trails that, you know, went through the jungle. And I think that was a favorite of many of us. I think that's a definite must. I loved staying at the one and only Nyungwe House, 5-star. I don't know that it gets any better than that in that area. Talk to me a little bit about what are some of the other accommodations that you've used. Obviously, one and only would be a preferred, but if somebody doesn't have the budget to maybe do one and only, what are some other options people have staying in the national park? So just to give people, if you're looking at a map of Rwanda, we're talking about Nyungwe National Park, National Forest. It's down in what you would probably call the more of the southwestern part of Rwanda. What other options do people have in accommodations that would work for incentive groups?
I'm looking at you, Yolanda. as the intrepid
to get my electricity has been down, so I had to charge my laptop. Is the background okay still? You're gonna catch all of this.
You're great.
Okay, so there's definitely there's options for anything from 3-star to obviously the one and only is definitely the top resort at the moment. But there's quite a few others that's a little bit more rustic, and having said that, actually quite nice. It almost blends into the area a little bit more than the one and only, where it's just luxury, et cetera, et cetera. One that I really like is called Sabinho, and that is just a fantastic property at the entry point where we did the briefing. And they've got, it's almost like villas, but very much freestanding, 16 rooms. So ideal for a small little buyout or a group. Virunga Lodge, which is also a great option. And we're talking about probably half the price of what you'll look at for the one and only.
Yeah.
And yet, you're not going to give up anything. You're going to still get great food. But it is possibly a little bit more immersive in the fact that it is more rustic and not so over the top. So it depends on your client.
Yeah, I think it's true that what the experience that we had was right up there as, you know, full 5-star experience. But, you know, we've had many clients before those hotels were built that went to the likes of the properties Yolanda's described, and they were no less enjoyable. The feedback was excellent.
Yeah. Well, it's a beautiful area. It's, you know, seeing the chimpanzees is a very different, I would say it's a pretty different experience than seeing gorillas, in that you don't get as close. I don't think it's recommended that you get as close. I think the chimpanzees are not as habituated to people, and maybe they take on a little bit of that human nature of being somewhat vicious to each other and to anybody that gets into their territory. So, you know, it's a totally different experience. So as you say that, you know, a lot of times Rwanda is done as an extension to another type of program. Do people, when you do extensions, do they stick with mostly just doing gorillas or chimpanzees, or do they do both? What's been kind of the best way to go about trying to see both of these awesome animals?
As you saw, the distance between the gorilla tracking area and the chimpanzees, it's a distance, it's more time away. So the take-up has been more for gorilla tracking than for the chimpanzees. I think exactly because you said, you know, they're up in the trees, they're kind of busy, they really, really, really kind of fast. Where with the gorillas, I don't know, Kip, what did you think? Which one touched you the most?
I think that's probably been for me the hardest thing to maybe wrap my head around. The best way to do Rwanda for a group is, you know, you want us, I would want them to see both. But as we know, these incentive programs are usually a certain length and going beyond a certain time frame for a lot of companies. They just don't want to go and have an extended 10-day plus trip, right? So if I were to choose between the two, I would probably hit the gorillas first as my first option, just because it's definitely that experience is so close up. You know, one of the members of our group took that video of the silverback beating his chest and kind of approaching the group in a pretty aggressive way. Yeah. But as you see from the video, you know, the group remains really very, very safe. They're in great hands with those guides. Like, it is a good experience. So yeah, I you know, getting back to Rwanda being a postage stamp, it's still vast. And, you know, we don't have interstates in Rwanda like we do here in America. Yeah. We can't just jump on a 4-lane freeway at, you know, 80 miles per hour and get to the very next destination quickly. You're driving through villages. The roads were good that we drove on. Like, I feel like the infrastructure there is great. But you're winding through mountains, and that comes with a lot of time, but it also comes with some amazing scenery. So there's pros and cons. So, you know, I guess kind of transitioning up into Volcanoes National Park and that area, that was amazing. What are there, 5 different volcanoes or 7 different volcanoes that are in between Congo and Rwanda? Yeah. I mean, that area is very, very impressive. We stayed at the one and only Gorilla's Nest, which of course I think is probably tops. If anybody does an internet search for one and only, they're going to find the Gorilla's Nest. They're going to find that at pretty much the top of every list. And of course it's exclusive, and it's 5, I would say it's probably beyond 5 star.
Yeah, know, me like too.
It's a great experience. So, I mean, the arrival there is amazing. It is, you know, you've got the dance party that greets you with the drums at the door, the staff that is just so, so accommodating and so kind. And I mean, I feel like this is probably true of other properties, but, you know, with the Rwandan culture, it's almost like you're arriving at your next home, right? You're arriving in your living room, and I really enjoyed that hospitality and that experience. You've got a great partner there. Tell me a little bit more about, you know, your favorite places to stay as the takeoff point to see gorillas.
Yeah. Oh, hands down, the one and only. Definitely superb. Then there's also Virunga Lodge, which is 45 minutes kind of drive from the starting point, but it's on top of these hills. You've got the most amazing views of these Great Lakes. And again, it makes you feel like you are in Switzerland. These amazing views on the lakes, and you literally feel like you're on top of the world there. It's kind of a winding road all the way up. But you've got that extra driving time to the starting point. But yeah, really cool. And then Sabinho, one of the kind of oldest properties there, which is also, it's lovely. It's just more village style.
Cool. Well, we went out on our gorilla trek. So in the beginning, before we left, you and Mike, we had our group gorilla trek that was set. You know, the gorilla trekking experience, you know, there's a limited number of permits that are offered on any given day. The cost is, you know, I don't know if it still is, but it was $1,500 US per person to be able to do that. So, you know, obviously there's a price to pay for really great experiences. You suggested to us that we should, we had 2 days to do it. We had the potential to do 2 different gorilla treks obviously two at twice the price, right? If we're talking about for groups, why would it be a good idea to do two? I mean, I've got my answer for that, but why was that the suggestion?
Yeah, I'll give you my answer. Because the first time I went, I just did one, obviously because of budgets, but I couldn't sleep the night before, but you're so almost freaked out and not prepared for how close you're going to get, that you're taking pictures, you kind of just amazed at this experience, that it's so overwhelming. And that night that I got back after my first trek, it's like, it was only an hour. I took too many pictures.
Where did the time go?
And that's when I booked a second trek, because the next time I went, I just sat, no cameras, just because there's so much that happens all the time around you, the little kids, little juveniles, fighting the moms and toddlers kind of off playing, and the silverback doing its thing. If you're taking pictures, you just focus, where there's so much happening. So I just feel the second time also, you know what to expect. You are not possibly that, the adrenaline isn't pumping as much, and you can just really take it all in for what it is.
Yeah. Mike, anything to add?
Well, this was actually my first trip to the Gorillas too, Kip. So I'd been quite blasé about it, to be honest. You know, Yolanda used to always say how amazing this was, and I thought, well, I'd love to go because I'd like to experience. And thinking, well, you know, is it going to be the same as the big five that we've all experienced here in South Africa? And I wasn't really prepared for just how surprising it was. You know, in our case, we, I'm trying to remember if you were in our group, Kip, but we were down on our hands and knees crawling through the bamboo, which is all sort of made a sort of a tunnel effect. After 2 hours, they said, right, we finally found the gorillas. And I was in a bit of a panic because, of course, you know, our group had invested heavily in terms of coming out there and everything. I really wanted them to see the gorillas. I couldn't bear the thought of saying, you know, no one's got to see the gorillas. So when they finally saw these little tufty heads sticking out of the top of the bamboo, and they said, right, we're here, gave us a quick debriefing. They then made us all go down on our hands and knees and crawl through this sort of bamboo tunnel. And then we literally came up in this bowl of bamboo, sunshine pouring in, which is also a plus because the gorillas actually don't like rain despite the fact that they live in it all the time. And, you know, as I stood up, there was this huge silverback sitting on its bottom in front of me, eating away on the bamboo. And I was overwhelmed at the sheer size of this creature and the peacefulness and the way that it looked right into your soul. And then, of course, all the activity Yolanda mentioned going on. I wasn't prepared for it. And I can see how, you know, a second time round, now knowing, you know, the exhilaration that you feel, you know, that you would be able to take in and absorb so much more. And it's a, you know, let's face it, it's a long way to go. It's a long way to travel. It's an expensive trip by all accounts for those few days. So, you know, one should, if one can afford to, bite the bullet and try and do the two treks, which I think is.
Really, yeah. Yeah. That's the question. Do you bite the bullet? And I think that, you know, everybody's going to have to make their choice, but, you know, I think it's a very high probability. I think, what did they say? 90%+ chance that you will see your family of gorillas. So it's not like it's hit and miss. You know, you're going to go out.
It's pretty guaranteed. Yeah.
Like I've been out on whale watch tours and gone during whale watch season, like off the coast of California, and I've been skunked, and it was, you know, you pay to do it, and you kind of realize, hey, this is nature, and you're not going to always, you know, come out and see what you hope to see. But I feel like they have a pretty high probability. They have teams of trackers that stay out in the night that track gorillas. They know they're using radios to communicate with one another to know exactly where to go. And so I think there's a high probability. So I don't know that's the biggest concern, but I think that, you know, the biggest thing is that once you arrive where the gorillas are, that's when the clock starts ticking. You have one hour from then, as far as the Rwanda government to be able to stay with your gorillas. You know, they, with COVID protocols, which I would assume just now months later, they're probably very similar. that there's the distance that we need to keep with the gorilla. But even with that, you know, that distance, those gorillas, they don't know the COVID protocols. So they were coming pretty close to us. And, you know, having those experienced guides there, but I agree, like you only get an hour, that very first time you're trying to record everything and you're just busy, just trying to take it all in that way. And that's my experience too on the second. So we climbed up, on our first one, we weren't too far away from Diane Fossey's, cabin or cottage of where she, kind of had her little headquarters. Right. Yeah. So we were pretty close to that. We were up on a different part of the mountain. I think on my watch, I was at nearly 9,000 feet in elevation, which is, incredible. That's so high. Yeah. But our second day was a totally different path. The trail was way different, much easier. We saw a totally different family with a totally different makeup of individuals. There were more silverbacks. You know, I think the second family was super funny because they had these two sexually mature males that weren't silverbacks yet. And the guides were telling us they were a team that, you know, whenever the silverback was in a certain area, one would act as a lookout while the other tried to go and, you know, be intimate with the females. And the one that was on lookout would be the one that would warn the other that the silverback was, you know, moving his way. And, you know, just like the funniest, most interesting thing. So yeah, that second day was a day to just like take it all in. I loved every second of my time with you in Rwanda. I can't thank you enough for that opportunity. For me personally, you know, I was able to take my wife with me, like you said, for a familiarization trip. That's uncommon. And that was, I would have come no matter what, but being able to share that experience with her was just amazing. And
it was such a pleasure to do that, you know, for us. We really enjoyed that aspect of it as well. So like to do more often.
Yeah, whenever you can, it's great. But it gave me that snapshot of what do incentive participants experience when they're able to bring their significant other along and share that experience. I think that, you know, that's the other side of incentive travel. When we have these shared experiences, not only with the companies and our colleagues at work, when we can have those experiences, that bonds teams. And we know that that's, you know, one of the driving forces behind incentive travel, but the reward that people give with incentive travel to be able to have a shared experience with a loved one it's something you cannot measure. I wish there was a way we could measure that. You know, growing up as a kid with my dad in this industry, and just being in places in Salt Lake, you know, I remember being a 12-year-old kid. And I don't know if you're familiar with Costco here, but Costco is this, you know, the warehouse and we buy our groceries there. And, you know, when you have a big family, that's where you go. Right. And so they have this deal. And even to this day, it's a hot dog and a soda for like $1.85. Like it is the best deal ever. And so that was my dad's go-to whenever he wanted to take one of his kids out for just a one-on-one. He had a cheap date. And I remember going to Costco and being there with him. And this man comes up and starts talking to my dad. And my dad had taken his company on a trip to Hawaii. And the man was just talking about the experience. And all of a sudden I noticed this grown man is crying next to the hot dog. next to the concession stand at the Costco. And I, you know, I'm just like, what in the world is happening? And I start noticing that this guy is talking about his marriage and how that experience his company provided gave his marriage a chance to change a little bit because it wasn't going so well for him. And he and his wife shared some experiences on that trip that helped their marriage. You know, I tell our people at destinations, you know, when we're planning these trips and we're creating experiences for people, a lot of times we don't know what is going on in people's lives. And, you know, for Missy and I, you know, COVID was tough. You look at our industry, like I was the same as you, Mike, like what if this all blows up? Like I step into this industry because of family. It's a family business. You know, my education is in the University of Hard Knocks. I don't have a college degree. What would I fall into? Used cars, selling used cars was what I was thinking about. But, you know, it was a great experience to get away from home, get away from kind of the reality of the world and experience a destination that, you know, people only dream about, being so close to gorillas that you can smell them. And, you know, maybe the smell isn't that great, but at the time it was like the sweetest perfume because of the whole sensory experience of encountering those gorillas and those chimpanzees and being with you, experiencing beautiful resorts and beautiful people is something that I will never forget. And Rwanda is a destination that people have to see. It's if it's not on a bucket list, it needs to be. And you know, when doing a destination like this, you can only put it in the hands of the very, very best. And that's for me, you two, Dragonfly, will always be the go-to guide for us. We preach, you know, our core value is to be the go-to guide and season partner in event travel at destinations. We only choose the very best suppliers like you that have that same mindset, that love our industry, that love creating experiences. So as we wind this down, maybe give me your elevator pitch, you two. You know, if you were to get the you know, somebody not only about Rwanda, but the other destinations in Africa that you operate in, what's your elevator pitch to come out of COVID and experience the very best that Africa has to offer?
Mike?
Well, okay. Well, I know Yolanda will have a litany, but for me, I think, you know, if people are looking for those unique experiences, they're looking for space, they're looking for fresh air. We've got plenty of that. I think Rwanda, as you experienced it, Kip, is just a fabulous destination to add on or to experience on its own. From an incentive point of view, assuming most of your audience, you know, for this podcast would be incentive travelers, I think that an East Africa program is an unbelievable bucket list item. For that, you could do anywhere from 30 people up to a couple of hundred people if you're using some of the bigger resorts in the Serengeti, for example, the Masai Mara. And then for the top echelon or the top achievers, do a breakaway trip to Rwanda. Lovely size would be like 20 to 30 people to extend up there and have experience that. I think there'd be very few experiences to match that. So that would be my recommendation. Keep it to your smaller groups, but it's essentially an ideal pre or post extension to an East Africa safari experience.
Yeah, I just think the cooped up demand for travel and wanderlust, it's in us. As you want to experience different things, we want to have immersive experiences, we want to have things that blows our mind, that just gets into your soul and into your heart. And Africa as a whole, southern or east, does that every single time. That's what I experience every time I travel on a group or a site inspection or on an educational. People get emotional, people get really, really touched by our African hospitality, by the tastes, the people, the passion of Africans, of being African, whether it's a third world country, but just how amazing we have actually made this, all our destinations, for people to experience that bucket list, emotional, money can't buy incentive experience. It changes things, and it can actually be you know, put into effect, like you said, with different companies as to forgiveness. You know, there's so many things how we work together as a country. Even if you look at a Lion Pride, how they stick together, and you know, with working together, that's how they survive. So there's so many things that we can kind of pull from Africa to apply into any corporate's life or any corporate's team efforts, etc. But the fact that you have fantastic food, great service with a smile, and bucket list experiences is just, it ticks all the boxes. It rewards, it motivates, and it changes your life.
Excellent. Well, we need to leave it there. Perhaps we need to do a discussion about all the other countries which you operate. I think we could probably have an episode for every single one. So maybe we need to do a series of other
You're
things.
Welcome, but, mate.
So thank you for your time today. I hope this thank has you. Been a value to you. I really think that this is a value to anybody that listens to it, because so many people just don't know about Rwanda, and they need to. And so I thank you for your time, and I hope to catch up with you really, really soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kip. And thank you for your partnership. We love working with you.
We love you guys. Okay.
Absolutely. Thank you, Kip.
All the best, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye. Ciao, ciao. Bye.
Thanks again for listening. We hope that you enjoyed this episode of the Destinations Incentive Travel Podcast. At Destinations, we strive to be your go-to guide and seasoned partner in helping you craft the perfect corporate retreat, President's Club, or rewards trip for your company. Check out how we do it at destinationsinc.com.